Welcome to The Machine, a computer science education podcast from the South East Technological University of Ireland. I'm your host, Rob O'Connor, from the Computing and Mathematics Department at SETU. This episode is the final one from our Computing Week events that recently took place here in SETU. In this case, it's a recording of a live panel discussion we held in front of around 200 Leaving Cert Cycle students from the surrounding area. We were talking about ICT jobs and what it's like to work in the computing industry. The panel was made up of Padraig O'Neill from Unum, Sinead Queeley from VoxGig, Mick O'Brien from Cargo, Donna Tilson from Sun Life, Brendan O'Farrell from Red Hat, and Amanda Freeman-Gator, a fellow lecturer from SETU. I was the host of the panel, and don't worry if you didn't get all the names, they'll be reintroduced again when we get to the actual discussion. I'll be upfront and I'll say that the audio quality isn't as good as I would have liked, as we just had a couple of ambient mics pointed at the stage. Some voices will be clearer than others, but the conversation is good and there were some great insights into what it's like to work day to day as a computing professional. Now, one thing I'll stress, and the panel does this too, is that while programming is important, it's not the be all and end all of tech jobs. There's loads of roles that don't involve coding at all. I think this podcast will be useful for anyone who's curious about what it's like to work in the industry, and that doesn't matter whether you're a second level student, a parent, or somebody who's thinking about a career change. Anyway, here's the panel. I hope you get something from it.
Good morning, folks. How are you? You're very welcome along here to the SETU auditorium this morning. We're going to follow up from Stemming Ahead with a talk or a panel discussion that's a title that rolls off the tongue, Courses, Placements and Job Opportunities. But we're not going to get too deep into the weeds of individual technologies. Instead, what I'd like to do is direct the conversation around experiences and personal stories, because I think it becomes a little bit less abstract, okay? Now, the first thing we're going to do is obviously introduce everyone. My name is Rob O'Connor. I'm a lecturer here in the Department of Computing and Mathematics at SETU. We have Amanda, we have Mick, we have Brendan, we have Sinead, we have Donna, and we have Padraig there as well. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get each of the panel members here to introduce themselves, and you might also just say what your role is in the company that you're representing. So we'll start with yourself there, Amanda.
Hi, everyone. My name is Amanda Gator, and I'm also a lecturer here in SETU, and I'm the course leader of the BSc in Software Systems Development.
Yeah, I'm Mick O'Brien. I'm Senior Director of Engineering at Cargo. So that's a very fancy word for I try and manage people and help them to do their work day to day.
Thanks, Mick. My name is Brendan O'Farrell. I work for Red Hat. I'm an engineering manager, but my day-to-day job is looking after emerging talent in Ireland. So I get to look after all the TY programs, the Women in Tech events, all the intern programs. So I get the easy job.
Hi, I'm Sinead Queeley. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of VoxGig, which is a software consultancy. And similar to Mick, my job is just make sure that everybody else has the time and resources and space to do their jobs.
My name is Donna Tilson. I work for Sun Life. I'm a director in the M&A and strategic partnerships function. So part of the strategic partnership functions is, like Brendan, you know, looking after emerging talent and making sure that we have the right relationships so that we have the right talent coming in.
I'm Padraig, you've met me already. So I'm from Unum in Carlow, so where we've a technology centre of about 300 people. And basically I'm responsible for the centre, for talent, for the impact on the business, etc., within the overall global reach that we have.
Great. So I'm going to start with yourself, Donna. I'm going to throw a question to you first, okay? So one of the things that I often reflect on when I'm talking to second level students, or even sometimes primary level students, is that when we talk about computing jobs, they can be a little bit kind of abstract. And there is a stereotype of a male, usually a white male, kind of hacker, dressed in black, listening to heavy metal music, locked in a basement, just tapping away on a keyboard, doing stuff that nobody really understands about. Do you think that stereotype is actually representative of the people who work in the industry as a whole?
I definitely think it's not representative of the people who work in the industry, but I think it's still there, right? Mm. We've made inroads into breaking that stereotype, but there's still a lot of work to do. like in Sun Life, I suppose it's definitely not stereotypical. We've a lot of females in the tech side of the business, a lot of females in the company as a whole. And I suppose it's getting people like you and people in primary schools and in secondary schools and third level even to understand that there's many opportunities. It's not just about coding. The whole software development life cycle, right? There's opportunities for everybody in each of those stages. And mainly, you know, main skills that are needed are confidence, communication skills, and your soft skills. That's how you present yourself and how you communicate and collaborate with other people.
So just kind of following up on that then, about jobs and what people actually do, because again, there's a kind of an opaqueness and an abstraction to IT jobs. Like if you talk to somebody about a firefighter, we kind of know what a firefighter does. We have an idea of that. If you ask somebody, what does a vet do? We know what a vet does. We know what a carpenter does. We know what an accountant does. We have an idea of that. But whereas an IT person, it's a bit more abstract. So I might direct this to you first, Brendan. So, and particularly because all of your organizations are a bit opaque as well, because if we talk about Apple, everyone knows Apple make iPhones. We understand the product they make. Or if you talk about Meta, that's Instagram and Threads. We know what they do. Whereas all of your organizations are not selling products that are in people's houses. You are selling technology that's in people's houses, but most people don't know it's there. Mm-hmm. Okay? So coupled with the abstraction of an IT job and a company that doesn't make widgets, to use a phrase, could you maybe describe what it is that you actually do, or the kind of stuff that actually happens in your organization?
Yeah, so we're the largest open source company in the world, Red Hat. We've 22,000 people. We're owned by IBM, which is another 350,000 people. So we control 98% of the Fortune 500 companies, the back end. So we design everything from your security systems to your deployment to day-to-day management of your data, all that sort of stuff. But in our, we just take Red Hat. There's probably, I think, 165 different roles in our company. So even if you get a degree out of here, computer science or software systems development, there's a chance none of you in the room, if you all come to us, be working on the same job. So if we take a software engineer, you'd be lucky if you spend 30% of your day actually coding. The rest of the time is in meetings, planning, communication skills, all of that. So when we take on young students and interns, the first thing you have to learn, as Donna said, is communication. So while you might know what we do, pretty much most of the airline companies in the world, the train stations, the train operators, EU, the American government, armies, they all use our back-end stuff. So you interact with open source stuff all day long. So Linux is our bread and butter, Red Hat's Enterprise Linux. Your satellite boxes, some of your phones, everything have our software on the back end of it. So we never get bored. Everything moves really, really fast in what we do. As I said, you have 150 positions, probably about 10 different levels of roles in those positions, so you can go anywhere and do anything. So from Amanda's course, we would have software engineers, we have project managers, we have program managers, we have emerging talent managers, all from the one course. So it's very, very varied.
Sinead, I might throw the same question to you. What is it that you actually do? If you could describe what people in your organisation actually do.
Yep. So we are a smaller version of Red Hat, a software consultancy, and we have software engineers. And again, it's open source software. So that means that anybody can kind of take the software themselves, the code, and maybe make some changes and maybe make their own products that have actually nothing to do with us. But our software engineers, again, about 30% of the time is actually on coding. And we have a real culture that we actually want our developers taking breaks, taking walks, taking time away from all screens. Because there's an awful lot of thinking that goes into code. Well, what am I going to write and why? And is it actually the best way to do it? And one of the most important things, we also kind of have the philosophy that actually maybe delete some code rather than adding it on, that you're trying to actually write the best quality code rather than just reams and reams and reams and reams of code. And a lot of it as well is, yes, you can build something new, but you also have to make sure that it works and that if somebody makes a change to some other service that you're interacting with, that actually it hasn't broken what you've built. So there's a huge amount of maintenance as well. And that maintenance then takes research and reading and time and going onto forums and going, well, what other company has had this problem and how do I fix it and who do I talk to? So when Brendan was talking about the back end, like the plumbing of what it's going, yes, you can have your lovely front end and your lovely website. but there's so many services and tools and everything that has to sit on and platforms. So you have to do an awful lot of reading, you have to do an awful lot of understanding how one piece of code interacts with another piece of code, and will it do it long term, or is it just going to do it for a week and then something's going to change and break? So it's very, very varied. No 2 days are the same. It isn't just all about being on your own with code. You do have to talk to people, read things, fix things. And then even when you do want to build something new, you have to make sure that you're building the right thing and that your expectation of what it's going to do and the client's expectation of what it's going to do actually match. So there's a big need for the soft skills, as Brendan was saying as well.
And just to add exactly what you're saying around the collaboration, it's not really one developer sitting on their own, right? There's multiple people that they have to interact with. So you'll have to talk to the people who are going to test your code. You have to talk to the people who are going to use the product that you're creating, so the end user, to make sure that you've satisfied what they wanted in the first place. And then the research piece, yeah, you know, it'll never stop, right? You know, there's new technology all the time. So none of the developers have all the answers, but you know, they will Google, you know, yeah, the best way to do things. They'll look it up, they'll ask someone sitting beside them, or they'll reach out to another part of the company and say, have you done this before? I've seen, you know, you talk about it. So that collaboration and that research piece never ends. And yeah, that's the thing to remember, I suppose, as well, that it's not that you'll come out of any course and be able to do, you know, just one thing. You'll continue to learn, and lots of opportunities, I think, as well, to move, yeah, within industry.
Mick, can I direct the same question to you? What is it that you do? Could you just describe, well, I know you're a manager, but what could you describe, yeah, the work for you? What do they do?
So, as you see here, right, there's a big mix. We have coders, but anybody in this room can work in a job with us or with any of the other companies, not as a coder. So our day-to-day would be, come in the morning, our head office is in New York, so some of the team is over there. They obviously work into our evening time because it's still their daytime. So you come in and check your email, check what work they finished doing that you're maybe going to pick up, then probably pop into the canteen for free lunch, then back out and maybe start some work, then maybe take a break and have a chat with your friends, have a bit of a laugh, then continue doing a bit more work, and then down for a free lunch, get in the pool, chat with your friends. Then back online in the afternoon, about 2 p.m. is in New York, 9 a.m. So now the team is online. That's where we're going to have online meetings with them, and it's probably where we get a good bit of our work done during the day. But like the different roles that we have, like, yes, we'll have coders, but there's like 7 or 8 different types of coding as well. You could be working on cloud infrastructure, or you could be working in actual code in the back end or databases. But aside from that, like, we have project managers, and project managers who have some knowledge of tech are vital. So they understand the difference between a website and an app as the most basic thing, understand a database versus some code. Then we have testers that we need, and we need testers that are manually going through an app or going through the UI and seeing what bugs are there and reporting them and maybe figuring out why did that happen, all the way through to then our product managers who are deciding what type of features we want to build, how is it going to satisfy a problem that our customers are having to make their life easier so we can sell it and make some money. So like, it's very, very varying to have a job in a tech company. But the one thing I will say about tech companies is as well, salaries are good, benefits are good, you've got loads of flexible working hours, so if you want to go to the gym in the morning and not start till 10 o'clock, that's good. If you want to take a longer lunch, you can. What's important for us is that the work gets done over kind of a 2-week period of time, and that's what's really valuable. But like, it's literally everybody in this room could get a job in a tech company, and with varying levels of education as well. You know, not everybody has to go and get a degree in the computing field where they're all coders. If they do that, well, we don't have enough people to run our company and to deliver what we need to do.
Paul, I'll go to you with the same question. But I don't know, it might have already been answered by everyone else, I don't know.
Yeah, I think largely it has. But I suppose maybe one way to think about it is that we organise, and a lot of the other companies as well, into scrum teams, right? So a scrum team is a team of maybe 8 people, right? 8 to 10 people, right? Depending on the size of what they're actually doing. And within that, you'll have maybe 2 or 3 programmers, 2 people to do testing or QA, like we talked about earlier. You'll have the product owners or business analysts that specify, I suppose, what's the outcome we're actually trying to create or the experience we're trying to create, etc. You may have some infrastructure people and other bits within it as well, right? But so essentially the classical stereotype programmer is 20% of the actual team. And then the organization say, we've got 300 people. So we're, you know, you take 300 people divided by 8, that's how many teams or whatever else broadly we have. And that's simply how most of the world actually organizes itself in terms of application development. So all the other skills are the skills that make the programmers look good and actually ensure that we actually deliver the value. And they're the ones that are critically important to us. And they're the ones that deal with the rest of the business and deal with the customers, etc.
I'm sure we might as well go to Amanda as well because she's feeling left out. So Amanda, like, what can you describe the kind of the day to day? I know you're here, so it's slightly different to what the rest of the folks are going to talk about.
I suppose I am here and I am a lecturer, but I was a student and I came in and, you know, I did a computing course. I didn't know what I was going to be. You know, I'm not a programmer. I got to third year in college and I had a passion for computer networks. I'm interested how data travels and, you know, how the internet works. How do we connect stuff? So I think it's important, you know, and then as time went on, we moved into cloud computing. So that's now become my area and my passion. You know, we have web designers. We have people who are interested in data science. You know, it's very hard to go to college and really know what you're going to be until you come in and experience the other courses, you know. So I'm lucky that I can teach the area that I'm passionate about. But I mean, don't ask me to sit down and write a program. I haven't written a program in 20 years. You know, there's other areas than just programming. And I just leave on this. I have a student at the moment. He's a really good basketball player. You know, and we were chatting the other day about what technologies are they using in basketball. And he was saying to me, you know, I never even thought about that. And I was like, you know, you might end up working for Nike. Yeah. So you can take your passion with computing and work in any area.
So that's an interesting point, is the pervasive nature of technology and how embedded it is in so many other industries that aren't tech. Actually, that's the real reach of tech, is that it's not just about technology for technology's sake. Porrig, I'm going to direct a question back to you, and I'm going to kind of have a bit of a long, rambling intro, and I hope you can keep up with it, because my thoughts aren't fully formed on this, because it's based on an experience that I had this week. So I've been here most of the week for Computing Week, and I've been getting a buzz and I've been G'd up by the talks, particularly around the ones around AI, just because I'm interested in that myself. But I wasn't able to attend any talks yesterday because there was heavy rain the night before, and my wife woke me up at stupid o'clock to tell me that we had a major drainage problem. Major drainage problem. And I leave your imaginations go wild. Whatever you think it is probably true.
Okay? Or worse.
So I was on the phone to a fellow yesterday morning who thankfully came out in mid-morning, and I spent yesterday wearing old clothes, getting filthy, trying to fix a problem. And we eventually found the root cause of the problem, which is actually roots growing into a sewer pipe. Stick with
this
me,
boys. This story has a point to it. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Roots, and now that will need to be dug up and fixed and et cetera, et cetera. And what that has made me think about is 100,000 years ago, when I was doing a master's, one of the very first papers I read was by a guy called Mark Weiser, and he talked about the computer for the 21st century. He talked about disappearing tech, and tech that disappears into the background so that it's like water. We turn on the tap, we expect water to come out, and the only time we notice it is when it's not there. Other than that, it's there. And we think about all the tech that we use each and every day that we take for granted, and we only notice it when it's not there or when it stops working. So given that you have a lot of experience in the industry, I just wonder if you could maybe reflect on that and think about what would happen if some tech in the chain stopped working to your business, to anyone else's business, or to the economy, to the entertainment industry, to whatever you have yourself. I know that's a long rambling question, but I hope it'll give you an idea as to what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I think,
by the way, I had an extensive shower before.
Hands up, who thinks Rob should move house? There we go. So it is an interesting question, actually. Somebody came up and asked us about solar flares and stuff like that, actually, as well earlier, which is, you know, quite interesting. And like, there's, I suppose, people talk about the cloud, right? Mm. The cloud infrastructure, and you know, there used to be a T-shirt going around that, you know, the cloud is just somebody else's computer. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Because it actually isn't actually up there, you know, wherever, right? It's just data centers somewhere that are connected, really, you know, to really fast networks, etc. That Amanda gets excited about, and we've all created these huge dependencies on this thing that we can't really actually see, right? We can interact with it, but we can't actually see it. And so, like, we're all sort of either, you know, on AWS or is Microsoft Azure or whatever else. So when the cloud breaks, it breaks a huge amount of businesses worldwide, and it does break, right? So you actually have to, you have to think about these types of scenarios, right? So you have to think and say, right, okay, can I make it a little bit more robust? So can I be on multiple different cloud providers? So if one goes down, I have the other, etc. But when the cloud breaks, or when something drastic like that actually happens, the whole world is down. And the, all our businesses have changed dramatically over the last 20 years, right? When your business is down, it's no longer somebody walking up to a an office or knocking on the door and talking to you, and you can sort of fluff it a bit for a while because the system isn't there. Because everything is self-service, right? Your sort of people, your customers are actually, and your clients are seeing immediately that actually you're down. You're, and I used to work in the airline industry for a lot of years, right? And we used to write merchandising solutions for airlines, so trying to, you know, sell people car insurance while you're buying, you know, an airline seat or a seat with extra leg room or whatever else within it. But once your actual site broke, it was so transparent to the whole world that you were actually out of business and you were down at that moment. And it's a huge damage on your brand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when it's working 99.9999% of the time, it's not even actually thought about. Do you know what I mean? Or the cloud isn't thought about or whatever else. But when it actually breaks, or when Amazon is down, or when and something else is actually down, and you actually trace it back to sort of saying, okay, right, well, it's actually that one, it's generally a human, you know, or something that's actually happened. Somebody's written something that wasn't probably fully thought out, or a certain scenario happened, or whatever else that actually broke the overall thing. Does that make sense, sir?
Oh, it does. Yeah, shade.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
A couple of examples. Porter was talking. BlackBerry. You're all too young to remember it, but they were the device for email. They were kind of one of the first smartphones, and their email server basically went down, and they were too slow to change it, and the business is now pretty much gone.
Gone,
right?
Yeah.
And the other example. There was a talk yesterday on cyber, I believe, but cyber attacks. When Porter was mentioning, you know, an airline site might go down. If an electrical grid for a country goes down, well, then everybody's screwed. Years ago, I worked in insurance, and there was a brown cardboard box upstairs in an office, and it was the kit that you went to when electricity went down, because the company had to stay open, the policyholders had to remain insured, people had a right to come in and buy insurance just because there wasn't an electricity. That wasn't part of their policy. They still needed to be insured. They still had a right legally to buy insurance. We had an obligation to hand them proof that they were insured. So there was actually a brown cardboard box that had everything that was needed to manually create and sell insurance. So businesses and organizations have to be prepared for the day that the roots break the pipe.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing it back.
Well, I was just going to say, because as you were talking about that, right, it's the, when we talked about the roles and the courses and the opportunities. So for all of those instances, there's people behind the scenes that's their job. So like the BCP, which is a business continuity plan, right, there's people that that's their job. They have to think about these. What if these disasters occur? Like with COVID-19, right, everybody had to react. But there were people in each of the organisations pulling together all of those plans, or running MIMS, which are major incident management. So again, that's somebody's job. But they have to understand how everything works within the company. They have to understand computing. Yeah. They have to understand who's affected, who, you know, who they need to reach out to let know. So all of those, it kind of comes back to the original topic as well. Well done. Around the course, you know, courses and the types of jobs that are available too, because we don't see them. They're behind the scenes, but you'll know about it if it goes wrong.
I'm conscious of time because our time is slipping away before we have the next talk, and I know you also want to get a break in. So I'm going to kind of go with two very quick questions. I'm also going to say, look, I'm not going to do a hard sell on courses or anything like that. If you're interested, I'm here, Amanda's here, and Sinead is down the front there as well. We're going to be knocking around. So if you want to come up and ask us any specific questions about courses or any of that kind of stuff, just come up and talk to us, okay? We're here, we're very friendly, we're very open. I might just want to get a cup of coffee into me before we start, okay? But I'm just going to hit the panel here up with kind of two quick questions. So, Brendan, I'll go to you with this one. Because you hire a lot of staff. What are the kind of the chief characteristics that you look for when you're hiring somebody?
I hire a lot of junior people, a lot of people straight out of college. There's three things you look at first, but the most important one is, can you work with us and can we work with you? It's about your ability to communicate and have you got a growth potential. When we interview you, even though you're in college and finished 4 years, we don't give you a technical interview. We don't challenge you in code. If you've got a 2-1 or a 1-1 or something out of here, we know that you're capable of learning, so that's fine. But we actually look to make sure you can communicate. And one of the things we always say, communication is not just about being able to talk, it's about being able to listen to understand. One of the other things is, if, you know, you won't be doing it now, but we say to first years and second years here, your first day in industry is the first day you start here. It's when you open your LinkedIn account and you make sure it's professional, it's set up for business. That's your first day in industry. You know, so when we look at that, we look at how you present yourself. That's part of your communication, your networking. You know, what's your interest in it? So the technology stuff, the lads work really hard getting you there. So we know that it's there. So we don't really look at that, but we look at you as a person.
Mike, can I give you the same question? What do you look for when you're hiring staff?
One of the big things for me is that we're right for the person. So, like, there's so many opportunities in tech companies that, you know, you could get a job, no problem. There's probably 10 different companies that'll make you an offer over a couple of months period while you're looking for a job. So you have the opportunity to work somewhere where you want to work. So for us, we want somebody who wants to work for us, wants to work for our company, wants to do what we do. Because once you have that interest in it, you'll care about your work. And that's the most crucial thing, because you'll automatically have an interest in learning more, in getting better, in doing better things. And from that, then we can give you all the support you need to learn a new coding language, to, you know, work with people that you're not used to working and getting familiar with them, to talk to customers if we need it. You know, we can give you all of that support once you are willing to do it, no problem at all. So that's a really, really key thing for me.
Okay, a very quick question then to some of the rest of the panel then, that's slightly at a different tangent, about your kind of pinch me moments, about I can't believe this is my job, I can't believe that I'm actually doing this, this is some crack. And I kind of tee it up with one of my own experiences. A long time ago, I was out in Australia, like most Irish people, I went out there for a while. And I was working for a large company, and they decided we were going to have a tech retreat day. And they took us to a very fancy place on one of the Victorian beaches, the Victoria beaches just outside Melbourne. And we were doing some web stuff, and it was great crack, it was really good fun in terms of the tech. Then we got probably the best lunch I've ever had in my life. It was unreal. And then we continued with the tech stuff on the beach for the afternoon. And I remember sitting down later that evening, looking at myself going, I can't believe this is my job. This is brilliant. So I'm going to hit you up, maybe the three of you at the end. You don't have to answer if you don't want, but what's the kind of the moment you went, my God, I can't believe I'm actually doing this and I'm being paid for this. So, I don't know, Tori, do you want to start? Or?
Sure, yeah. I suppose you have, I think there's probably two angles to that. There's one where you sort of, you know, it's a great life experience, like you're talking about, right? So you get to, you know, I got to travel around the world, you know, day trips to China, stuff like that, stuff you may or may not want to do.
Day trip to China. Yeah.
But also you find yourself, you know, down in South Africa, conferences, and then being able to do safari and other things like that. So it opens up those types of opportunities for you. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, well, this is really great. You get to meet great people around the world. Mm-hmm. But then you also get ones where you start to say, is this really my job? Do you know, situations where... And it's probably to do with the fact that technology is everywhere, right? And going back to that, you know, if you're running a company or an application or whatever else, it's very transparent out there to the world, right? So going back to my travel experience, we were a company in Dublin. We had people in Dublin producing applications and hosting applications and stuff like that for airlines around the world. And we were in Hong Kong at the time, trying to sell solutions to an airline or whatever else. We had a great day with the actual airline. We're upstairs in their rooftop bar or whatever afterwards, having a chat with them, great. And then I start getting these text messages and other things actually going, our phone started hopping. And it was a very simple thing, but it's amazing how brand damaging it can be, right? So there was a little wire in our lift in Dublin that had started to spark, set off the actual fire alarm. And the guys called the fire brigade, which is fair enough, right? So you had the big red Dennis fire truck outside. All our colleagues were there in Dublin taking pictures of themselves with the actual fire truck. But as a, you know, as an airline provider or airline solution provider, then you have all your customers saying, okay, these guys' building isn't secure.
Yeah.
The whole, all our sites on fire. So you get the other side of it or whatever else, you know, they're sort of saying, okay, right, I've got to manage this situation, you know, then as well. So it's quite varied in terms of what actually comes up. But it's sort of, you know, just the other side of things.
Yeah.
That's sort of the non-typical
no
type of things.
No
2 days are the same or no situation the same.
Probably the same, right? The travel opportunities and the opportunities to work with other people that you wouldn't get, like, in a job in a shop. Not that there's anything wrong with the job in the shop, but, you know, the opportunities, I suppose, that it brings with regards to that. And also, I think we're really proud of the impact that we have on the community. So we do an awful lot of fundraising. And last year, we were lucky enough to give, like, 64,000 back to the community. So I love those moments. Yeah. It's really, and seeing the impact, I suppose, the value that the employees give in being able to do that, and also the impact that the fundraising efforts have on the community.
And Sinead, to yourself?
Yeah, I never had a lunch on a beach in Australia, so I obviously have worked
missing
for
out
all the wrong jobs. Kind of a combination. It was the travel. For me, it was actually travel to Brussels. I used to love going to meetings in Brussels and seeing people from all over Europe working together on problems. Maybe you might have some policymakers there as well. So again, it takes it out of, oh, you at your desk. You're actually seeing, oh, there's 480 million people in Europe who are, you know, affected by or paying for the work that you're doing. And so it's, that was it. The Brussels, walking down the streets in Brussels used to be my pinch me moments, because it was like, all right, this is actually real. This is bigger than me at my desk.
I'm just going to, this is the last comment, because then we're going to do a break. I'm just going to go to Amanda, and I'm not going to ask you the same question, but I'm going to just going to summarise what I've heard from the panel, and maybe just get you to kind of reflect, see, am I correct, or how you disagree. So what I'm hearing from the panel is, look, the tech industry is very large, there's loads of jobs you can have. Technical skill is one part of the equation, but it's not the be-all and end-all of things. Communication is an absolute key component, and I would probably summarise that by saying it's probably very important that you're able to get along with other people. So being sound and being personable is probably just as important as having that technical skill. How would you feel that summarises the conversation we've had and what you've heard from the panel here?
Yeah, I think so. And I suppose just for anyone at the moment who mightn't be very confident, or you might be kind of quiet, you know what I mean? Don't think now, you know, there's no role for me. You know, there is a role for everybody. But yes, you are going to work on the team. But we work on you with that. That's why you come to college. You know what I mean? We spend time with you. We get you to work in teams, and we bring you out of yourself, you know. But I just think you're very lucky in the Southeast, especially in Waterford now, that we have all these companies on our doorstep. Certainly when Rob and I were young, you know, to make big money, you had to go to England or you had to travel. You know, we actually have all these companies on our doorstep, and we're lucky that they're dealing with us in SETU. And as Brendan said, they know what they're getting. When you leave here with a degree from SETU, all the companies locally know the type of graduate that they're getting, you know. So I see lots of girls here today. You know, I'd love to see some of you considering IT as a career. And certainly, I mean, I was thinking there, what do I like about my job on good days? You know, graduations, seeing you coming in first year, quiet, nervous, graduating, going and getting a job with the lads. You know, that's what makes my job great. So maybe some of you might be lecturers in the audience, future lecturers.
Don't do it.
It could be a DJ like Robin.
John is up the back of what are you talking about? Okay, folks, we're gonna put a pin in it there. As I said, myself, Sinead and Amanda, we're going to knock around here. If anyone has questions about courses, come up to us. The lads are going to be around as well if you want to ask any questions there. There's more talk coming up. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Machine. If you liked it, please leave us a nice review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to connect with me, I'm at RobO'Connor_IRL on most social platforms. I'm on LinkedIn too, and you can also find my profile on the setu.ie website. Right, we'll be back soon with more computer science talks. Sláinte.